Hello, we have completed four chapters. Maybe we started with the financial inclusion, then slowly we moved into the self-help groups. Then we have a coverage on the National Rural Livelihood Mission. Then we completed on the joint liability groups. Today we are kind of making a beginning with the microfinance institutions and their linkage with the banking system. What for this linkage is there? This is just to provide the credit support to the micro enterprises. Now, there are various types of institutions which provide the microfinance. Maybe the banks are there, maybe small finance banks are there. There are NBFC MFIs are there, which are providing the credit to these people. So some of these kind of dimensions, especially the focus in this lecture will be on the NBFC MFI, non-bank finance companies, and who are the regulators for them. How this is functioning, because they do create credit. So the regulatory issues do come into picture. How that is happening, what is the linkage between banks and the NBFC MFIs? That is what we are going to address today. The picture is showing you something like a micro enterprise. His fellow is pursuing with the support from the NBFC MFIs. Let us look to some kind of what we are going to cover. What is the concept of the microfinance institution? We have covered the microfinance. We are talking about the microfinance institutions now, which provide the microfinance basically. We are going to look to some kind of comparison between the ESG lending and the MFI lending. What is the difference between these two institutions lending? What is the approach? How this differs, you know? What is the collaboration? Because now there is a lot of talk. Can we have a collaboration between the MFIs, microfinance institutions, and the fintechs? Financial technology institutions, you know, can we go for it? What is, because most of the time, the moment I uttered a word microfinance, it comes to our mind, what is that Bangladesh experience? How that the experience is useful to us? That is what we are going to see in this chapter. We are also going to see some kind of microfinance sector. Who are the partners? Who are the kind of agencies which are providing a kind of loan support or a loan portfolio? Who are creating through these mechanisms, you know? Who is the regulator? What are the changes as far as the regulation is concerned? Maybe the regulator is very simple, that the Reserve Bank of India is the basic regulator for the banking system. But what are the changes which are kind of favoring the MFIs at this juncture? What are the challenges? There are competition between the MFIs also. How this competition is affecting the MFIs performance, you know. Some of the financial performance of the MFIs will be shared through a transparency. But the most preferred route for the MFIs, microfinance institution at this stage, is to go for the business correspondent route. Why that happens? That comes to our mind, and we shall try to address that. Right at the moment, I don't want to give answer to that question, but hold on till we conclude this chapter. But more MFIs are coming as business correspondent. What is the quality of assets? Quality of assets in the sense, what is the NPA? Kind of proportion for these institutions once they are creating a kind of, you know, loan portfolio. What are the risk mitigating mechanisms these institutions follow? There is a view that along with the regulators like Reserve Bank, there is a self-regulating agencies or self-regulatory organizations, they call SROs, self-regulatory organizations. How these institutions are working? What is P2P, peer-to-peer lending? That is what is coming up. Maybe some of the NBFCs are aspiring for P2P certificate from the Reserve Bank of India, because then only they can undertake that P2P lending. And as usual, we shall also see the perspective of the MFI by 2024-25. That's another thing which I shall be addressing as far as this presentation is concerned. Basically, what I was explaining you, these particular slides explain you two concepts. One is the microfinance and another microfinance institution. Now, let us focus few, you know, let us invest our time on these concepts actually. Because these concepts are interlinked, they have to be understood thoroughly when we go into the depth of this particular chapter. If I look to the Reserve Bank of India circular, you know, Reserve Bank of India issued a circular on where they issue circulars on various aspects. One of the circulars which is pertaining to microfinance, they define a microfinance. As I explained to you earlier also, these are basically the collateral free loans. Collateral free loans, no physical collaterals are insisted. These are given to the households who have a lower income. Now, lower income means how? Now, various countries have their own definitions of low income. As far as we are concerned in India, we are seeing those households having an annual income up to rupees 3 lakhs are the kind of low income households which get qualified for microfinance support. Basically, these are the small loans which do not, these are the loans which are given to the kind of, you know, poor people who do not have access to traditional banking system. Please remember this. Now, three things I have said so far. One, collateral free loans, perfectly okay. Second, they have a low income, that is something like up to 3 lakhs rupees. Third dimension, I'm saying that these are the small loans, relatively small loans compared to the traditional banking system. These are loan sizes, little small. This is provided to the households who do not have access to the traditional banking services. Now, these with three kind of dimensions, let us go into the depth now. What is the MFI? What is the microfinance institutions? MFI or microfinance institution is the delivery mechanism. It's a delivery mechanism for what? For providing credit to whom? To the poor. Poor, I've defined earlier, those having income up to 3 lakhs of rupees for defining the microfinance concept. Basically, these MFIs, they have a kind of various sources of funding. One source is either they can get the loan from the donors or the investors, and they also get a loan from the banking system, or I call them financial institutions. Now, I'm making a little more broader word here, financial institutions, because even the developmental financial institutions like NABARD and SIDBI, they do provide credit support to the MFIs. So therefore, I've used the word rather than the banks, I've preferred a word financial institutions to include banking system plus SIDBI plus NABARD. That's what I wrote the word financial institutions. These are the kind of SIDBI and NABARD, they are basically the developmental financial institutions which do provide a financial support to MFIs for purveying the microfinance to the poor people whom already we have defined actually. These institutions, these in the sense, MFIs, they borrow from the financial institutions for what purpose? For on lending to the individuals or to the groups. As we have discussed earlier, there could be two approaches. One, the loans could be given to the individuals, or loans could be given to the groups. These groups could be in the rural areas, maybe in the semi-urban areas or in the urban areas. Now, what for we should give these loans? The idea is very simple: to raise their income and ensure that the livelihood is created. This is what happens. So MFI is a delivery mechanism. MFI we have defined in terms of the RBI circular with those few clauses. I said these are relatively small loans. These are the loans for the people who are relatively poor, whose annual income is something like 3 lakh rupees per annum. Third, I said that these are the people who were excluded from the banking system. So we want to roping these people to the credit flow. So that ultimate mission is very simple. They move out of the informal credit mode to a formal credit mechanism. You know, that is what the idea is there basically. Because these are the very, you know, this is repeatedly said, but again, a kind of thing, but must get a caution. These do not have access to credit, traditional banks, you know, because these are the credit purveyor. Banks are also credit purveyor. Then what is the difference? The difference is of size actually. These MFI loans are relatively smaller compared to the loans granted by the traditional banks. You know. So these are basically smaller loans. We will go into little more details. We have already explained to you, but some more details we will see. These loans are of smaller nature. They are of short maturities. These are the loans which are given without collaterals. These are the loans could be for consumption purpose, could be for income generating activities. But largely I'm saying these loans are for income generating activities. We'll see those proportions. A large number of loans are now going for income generating activities. This is what I promised you. How can I get understanding of the microfinance? You know, what are the features? You know, basically, you know, these tools I explained to you earlier also. These are the tools which enable me to for the women empowerment. In a sense, the participation of the women in the decision making, maybe at the household level, maybe at a panchayat level. They are basically the underprivileged ones who can come forward with the support of microfinance. Basically, I explained to you, these loans are very small. They are disbursed based on the needs. You know. They are given to whom? To rural areas, maybe semi-urban areas, or even could be the urban areas. You know, basically, they are the innovative approaches. Innovations, I explained to you earlier also. Anything what you are doing, if you do in a simpler way, if you do in a faster way, if you do in a better way, this is what is innovation actually. Improve your practices so that these people get the credit from the formal system. Basically, I want to highlight this issue. Basically, the MFI loans are high-touch business, you know. In the sense, In the sense, the customer places a lot of trust and partnership with a company or, in many cases, a specific group of people or a team in the company. These people develop a trust and they kind of, you know, take the loans from this particular team. They repay the loan to the team. This is how they develop a personal rapport between the institution which is lending to them and the poor borrowers who take the credit from these people. This is one important thing you must remember. This is a high-touch business. And therefore, these institutions were affected much more in the COVID period because the model itself is based on the high-touch business model, where there is a relationship between the borrower and the lending agency through a networking system, actually. There is a complete faith, understanding between a borrower and the team of a company which works at the grassroots. This is what is the kind of, you know, mechanisms of certain features I thought I must share with you. The transaction costs are less as far as the microfinance is concerned. You will ask me how. The simple answer is, these are basically the loans through the group mechanism. You know, there is a joint understanding, there is a mechanism. Maybe the loans could be to individuals, but there is a group guarantee. That is very important to know. These are in a cluster. So the cost of appraisal, the cost of monitoring, the cost of follow-up is lesser for the banking system. You know, these loans are basically for short period. You know, that's what I wrote, short repayment period. The transparency is quite high. You know, system of operations is quite transparent. You know, basically, there is a straightforward mechanism for processing, for approving the loan and delivering the credit. Please remember this. These are the plus of the MFIs. They have a kind of, you know, there is a mechanism which is very straightforward as far as the processing is concerned, approval is concerned, and loan disbursements are concerned. There is a peer pressure, as I discussed right from the beginning of the course. The peer pressure is there, which acts as a substitute for a collateral for the loans, you know. Because normally in the traditional banking, the collaterals are insisted. In case of MFI, the peer pressure substitutes the need for the physical collaterals. Misuse of loans is little less. That's what I can say. It's a little uncommon. There is a guarantee for repayment. The people come forward because there is a peer pressure. There is a group which has signed an agreement for repaying the loans. That kind of mutual agreement helps the banks getting back their loans. This is the kind of comparison, you know, between the MFI lending and the SHG lending. You know, the last column, right hand column, you can just focus on that. Basically, these loans are for poor, but they are on the verge of the borderline of the poverty line. In the sense, they are not very poor, but they are close to poverty line. Then they can cross the poverty line. That's what we are saying, that's there. Possibly the interest rates are more in case of MFIs. Let me caution you at this stage. How these interest rates are high? Because interest rate normally covers three things: cost of funds, cost of operations, and the provision for debts, provision for bad debts, what we call. So these three things: one, cost of funds, transaction cost, and the risk cost, which emanates from the defaults. Now, these, because of these three parts, because they basically borrow from the loans from the financial institutions and then they lend to the poor. So therefore, the cost of funds is usually high. That's why I said the rate of interest is more as far as the MFIs are concerned. You know, the lending operations are by the staff of the MFIs, actually. In case of SHG, we have known it. The appraisal, the monitoring, the supervision, all these functions are transferred by the banking system to the groups. Whereas in MFIs, they undertake, these functions are undertaken by the staff of the MFIs itself. What functions? Appraisal, monitoring, supervision, all these functions are taken care of by the staff of the MFIs. That's the differences which I'm saying. Focus on the right-hand column so that you will get into a little more clarity, because SHG bank linkage, we have discussed enough. Now we are trying to make a comparison with MFIs. Basically, these loans could be for individuals or, but please remember, although these are for individuals, they are with the group guarantee. That is very important to know. Who promotes these groups? Basically, the MFI staff. The staff is well trained for promoting these groups and linking them with the MFIs and all. Basically, the loan details are communicated to the credit bureaus, because ultimately these bureaus, they collect a lot of information and you know it. What we are trying through all these formal mechanisms is build a credit history for the rural poor, you know. We build a rural credit poor's credit history. Now that credit history helps the banks to go for future lending. In the days to come, these scores or these information which are with the credit bureaus that help these people to take a decision with regard to the loaning, you know, that is very important. We should understand. Basically, you know, I made one statement that the business correspondence I was using very often, you know, suddenly I switched to a business facilitator slide, you know. Why? The difference between BF or business facilitators and the business correspondent is only one. And that difference is the business correspondents can handle the cash. But business facilitators do not handle cash. Cash transactions are not there in case of business facilitators. Both the functions which I've listed here are very common to the BCs also. But these BF or business facilitators, the only difference is they do not handle cash. That's what I should remember. Rest of the things are common between BF and BCs, you know. Now, who could be the BFs, you know? BFs, BCs could be common, you know. But only thing I had to remember is, at the back of my mind, that BCs can handle cash, BFs do not handle cash. Now, these BF or BCs, these could be NGOs, could be SAG members, could be farmers clubs. These are the informal organizations of the farmers which come into picture. They can act as BFs. We can have the cooperatives also as BFs or BCs. I told you the difference. BC is only handling cash and undertake all these functions. BF cannot handle cash. That's a difference I have to remember. Rest of the things are common actually. Maybe some of the agri clinics, agri business centers can also be there, which can act as BF, you know. Maybe some of the individuals who are retired postmasters or maybe retired teachers, they can also be the kind of BFs, or they can become BF into BC, provided they handle the cash. Basically, FMCG stockist, you know, they can also be the BFs, you know. The postal agent, the insurance agent, then the list is quite lengthy, you know. But these are the people who are eligible to work as BF, and if they are handling the cash, they become BCs. What are the functions? What is BFs and BCs to do? This is what you have to remember, you know. Basically, they help in identification of the borrowers, identify the borrowers so that they can be linked to the banking system. Second, create awareness about the banking products. Very important, you know. You have to create awareness about the banking products and services. Third, processing or preliminary processing takes place by the BFs, you know. Promoting SHGs or joint liability groups and ensuring their linkage with the banks, actually. This can be done by the BFs or BCs. If they handle the cash, they will become BC. If they do not handle the cash, they are BFs, you know. That's the difference I have to remember. Post-loan monitoring is also undertaken by the BFs, you know. The sale of microfinance, micro-insurance, the mutual fund products are also sold through BFs, you know. So these are the functions which are undertaken by the BFs. You know. I have some more to add, let me say. There is a view now that can we have a, this is what is commonly we heard now, can we have a collaboration? Can we have a collaboration? Between whom? Maybe at this juncture I'm talking only of fintech. We will talk about little more about the other institutions also. Can I have the fintech and the MFI collaboration? Some of the MFIs are not in a position to meet the cost of digital infrastructure because the investment costs are very high. Now, under this juncture, can I think of a collaboration between fintech and the MFIs? Therefore, I wrote that sentence. Partnerships of MFIs with the payment banks, with fintechs, is one of the options because the MFIs, especially the smaller MFIs, they are not in a position to invest in technology actually. The cost of technology infrastructure is high for them, so they are possibly unable. And to fill up that gap, can I have an option? Yes, I have an option is enter into collaboration between the fintech or with the payment banks. Payment banks, if you get a little worried, let me just give you a hint here. Indian Postal Bank is one of the payment banks in the country, you know. Please remember, only one thing, the payment banks do not give credit. Post office will not give you credit. That's what you should remember as far as the payment banks are concerned. They cannot give credit to you. They can. You can deposit the money, you can go for remittances, you can go for insurance, but they cannot give you the credit. That's the only difference we can. But MFIs can give the credit, yes? So can we have a collaboration between the MFIs and the payment banks? Because payment banks cannot give credit, MFIs can give the credit. MFIs, most of the times, they are not allowed to raise public deposits, actually. That is, some MFIs could be allowed. It depends upon the regulatory aspect, whether they are deposit making or they are not deposit accepting institutions. That's a difference you have to remember, you know. But most of the MFIs, if you go into details, they are not allowed to raise the public deposits. And therefore, can we have a collaboration between the payment banks and fintechs with the MFIs? That's what we have to remember. Then conceptually, the fintechs can design and develop the microfinance products and can sell these products through MFIs. You know, now I'm talking about collaboration. So I must do something, the other fellow will do something. So here I'm saying the designing of the products, the designing of the services will be done by whom? By fintechs, and will be grounded through the MFIs. That's what I'm expecting, a collaboration. You know. Now what happens when I talk about the banks and the MFIs, the fintechs? They make a kind of, there is a problem which is slated, that the banks and fintechs, they lack the IT security and the regulatory certainty. That's a big problem, you know. There is a kind of feeling that these banks, these fintechs, they lack the IT security, they have a regulatory issues. Regulatory issues in the sense, maybe with the Reserve Bank of India, they have certain concerns. So that kind of problems is coming up when we talk about these collaborations. When we look to the kind of collaboration between fintech and the MFIs, there is a view that it is very difficult to work with the banks. That's what fintechs view, because both have their own points. You know, fintechs view that it's difficult to work with the banks due to differences in the management culture, due to the operational processes, they are different. So therefore, there are difficulties when we talk of any collaboration. You know. There is one biggest issue is when we talk about the adoption of the digital financial services, this is getting adversely affected, please remember. Because of what? Because of poor penetration of the smartphones. The smartphones are relatively less, especially among the women, the proportion is less actually of smartphones. Limited internet connectivity, that's another area which is bothering us. Third, limited financial literacy, you know. Fourth, as I said, the gender gap in the ownership of smartphone is quite high, in the sense the females have relatively less ownership of the smartphones. Now that affects the adoption of digital financial, you know, approach, which we are promoting. This is what I told in the beginning. Once I utter the word microfinance, we are linked with the Bangladesh, you know, with Professor Muhammad Yunus, you know, Muhammad Yunus. What he started with the Grameen Bank, you know. Now I have four experiences to share as far as the microfinance in Bangladesh is concerned. We shall show you four slides actually. Through the four slides, we are giving you the kind of glimpse of the microfinance in Bangladesh, you know. Basically, the Grameen Bank, you know. What the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh does? It supports the unemployed graduates in what? In starting their own enterprise. So livelihood focused, you know. What bank does? They follow a credit plus approach. Credit plus, again, defined. They provide a package of services which includes training, which includes capacity building, which includes the transfer of technical knowledge, you know, which includes even establishing the market linkage and handholding during the initial stages of the activity, which is very important. So what I said was, basically the Bangladesh Grameen Bank, they provide the loans or a banking support to the poor, to the people who are a kind of, you know, unemployed. I'm putting them graduates, unemployed graduates, in starting their own enterprises. Maybe the Credit Plus is followed, which provides me the skills, which provides me the technical advice, which provides me the building the linkages. So that the marketing is addressed. The issue of marketing is becoming very important when you talk of the self-employment. Even these institutions, they provide the handholding support when they initially undertake the activity. So this is the first, you know, part of sharing of Grameen Bank. You know, there are other institutions in Bangladesh itself which does a lot of work. We'll share with you one by one. So first part is Grameen Bank. Second institution is Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee. You know. Now this committee, what they do is, they identify the poor. They do identify the poor, and they must have a basis. So they use a basis which is, you know, mapped on the basis of the World Bank, you know, support, where the grant is available, you know. What they do is 40% comes as a grant, loan comes in remaining 60%. So this is basically loan and grant combination, you know. The poverty map is prepared by the World Bank. They use it for identifying the poor. That's one thing. Secondly, loan plus grant is the second thing which they give it. Third, they get a support. These institutions, you know, Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee, or we call the BARC, you know, BRAC. So these institutions, they get a support of the international agencies because they provide 40% grant. That's what you should remember. They provide the, what they do? They provide the skill development support. They upgrade the skills of whom? Of the school dropouts. You know, school dropouts is the one issue which they are addressing by imparting the skills to these school dropouts who are having an age of 14 to 18 years of age. They give training in what? They give training in tailoring, hospitality, management, something like graphic designs, mobile services. These are the activities which are given training, free training for these people. Basically, I told you these are the school dropouts. And one thing you remember, these are free. The training is imparted free of cost. Also look to it. The placement is up to 80%, very high ratio, you know. So therefore, they create the self-employment through the kind of this mechanism, you know. Handholding support is provided for about 2 years. That is very important, you know. Because any development activity, I said, one is a credit plus, another is something where I had to go for it, where I provide a support in the initial stage because they require a handholding. They will not be able to pursue the activity without the support of other institutions immediately, you know. So starting, they will require a support which comes from the kind of the BRAC, you know. They do provide a support, handholding supports, you know. Basically, the loans are given to these people, so that they initially they undertake the activity with all the training and the marketing linkages which are there. Please remember, loan is given without cost to the trainees who do not get placed anywhere. That is very important you have to remember. These loans are given free for those people who do not get placed anywhere. Please remember their placement ratio is 80%. So only the 20% people find a problem with regard to the placement. For them, the BRAC comes into picture and gives a kind of credit support, which is cost-free. And they do not get placed. That's what the problem starts. You know. The third experience, the Association of Social Advancement. This is the third Bangladesh experience. It is a self-financed MFI now, which operates in Bangladesh, South Africa, and America. These are the three countries where they operate. What they do? They impart education. They increase their level of awareness. They increase the confidence. They increase the skills. These figures are there which are giving you a hint that they created a kind of livelihood for about 1.5 crore people. They planted saplings as a part of social afforestation. That's what the institution does. So along with the credit, they do something more also. But basically, they give a kind of support for education, for skill building, awareness creation. That's how the support comes. There is another experience of Bangladesh, it's fourth. That is the Rural Development Agency, RDA. What they do? They give training in what? Dairy, poultry, horticulture. These are the activities for the farm sector which are supported by this institution. Some of the non-farm sector activities are also supported. Like, you know, the cats they learn to prepare. They also go for jelly making. They go for the income levels of the people ultimately has to be raised. So all these mechanisms, you must be seeing it. They are all aiming at credit plus. Along with the credit, something more is coming. They undertake the social afforestation, like I said, that Association of Social Advancement does provide the support, you know. But basically, the activities which they pursue, they create a livelihood for these people. So livelihood creation is at the center of these activities when we talk about the Bangladesh and the microfinance experiences. You know. This is what happens, you know. This particularly the last but one column, just see. The microfinance is coming from various institutions. For example, the banks, the small finance banks, the NBFC MFIs, the share of others. Maybe there are other than these small institutions are there. Maybe beyond NBFC MFI, there are some MFIs who come under the category. So if you look to the last but one column, something like 44% comes from the banking system. The small finance bank gives me something like about 15-16% credit does come from them. NBFCs are around 1/3. You look to all that row, you know, share of NBFC MFI in the total outstanding. This is the, please remember, this slide I must explain you. This slide gives me the total portfolio of the microfinance sector. The microfinance does come from the banks, does come from the small finance bank, does come from the NBFC MFIs. Beyond this, there are small institutions which they are in the picture, they provide that. But 41% comes from the banks and 34% comes from the NBFC MFI. So NBFC MFI's role is about 1/3 in the loan outstanding in the microfinance sector. That's what I should get it. So the role of the NBFC MFI, you should focus at this moment. About 1/3 of the portfolio is built through NBFC MFI, who get credit from the banking system or who get credit from the financial institutions. I explained to you, maybe SIDBI is there, maybe NABARD is there. They do get support from these financial institutions. This is something, we thought we must share with you what is active accounts. About 10 crores accounts are there of these, microfinance sector, this is what it gives. My loan portfolio size, if I look to it, that last but one column, that is 21-22, I get a figure of about 2,62,000 crores. So about 2.6 lakh crore is enough to understand me is a business of the microfinance sector. About 1/3 of it comes from the NBFC MFI. That's what I should get into it by this time. Then I made two things I must tell you at this juncture. What is that outstanding and what is the loan disbursement? Or sometimes if I use the literature, I go for the flow and stock. So these concepts, sometimes they create confusion. So let me invest a minute on that. Loan disbursement is a flow actually. Disbursed during the year. Please remember, these are the loans which are given by the financial institutions or by the banking system during a particular year. Maybe during 21-22. That year, if I look at it, these are the loans which are disbursed. When I talk of the loan outstanding, which I call as a stock, that is on 31st March of 2022. So stock is on a particular date. That is normally at the fag end of the financial year. So stock is a loan outstanding, which is on 31st March. But when I talk about the loan disbursements or when I talk of a credit flow, that is during the year, how much has been given by the institution to the targeted people. So get into a little more details of this. I'm not going to give you a lot of statistics, or I don't want you to remember many things. But two things you should get to: the portfolio size. Total portfolio size of the microfinance is about 2.6 lakh crores. Please remember, my SHG folio is other than this. That is something like a lakh of crores, which I told you earlier also. Maybe a lakh of crore is there, which is from that sector now. But this folio is other than SHG folio. That's what we should remember right there. Then the last row, which is very important that you must focus at this juncture, is the PAR, performance, the kind of, which gives me indication about the NPAs or a non-performing assets, gives me a kind of area of concern for this. So this, I'm creating a kind of background for you to get into my PAR business, my performance business, that is the area of concern. Earlier, the figure was something like, 1.78. in 2019-20, but then subsequently I had a COVID problem. Maybe the institutions, as I said, these institutions were affected and they are facing a little problem. Maybe things are improving, that's what I can say, because now the things have come to normalcy, though PAR is kind of, lowering down with the passage of time. That's what I'm expecting. So, but this is the area of concern. Thank you very much.